I just talked to another friend of mine who went to Black Hawk Tech to learn HVAC, you know, heating and cooling, got a heating and cooling degree. And now he's, you know, working for a heating and cooling firm in Janesville so he could stay home because he didn't want to leave. Within the, he could have left with GM. He could have gone to Arlington. He could have gone to Kokomo or somewhere else in Fort Wayne, I think. But he went to school because he wanted to stay. So you're seeing people who are really deeply attached to the community who are trying to do everything they can to stay. We ought to make it as easy as possible for them to do that. That's why our community colleges is a big deal. That's why Black Hawk Tech, which is a very good technical institute, we need to encourage things like that.
An outtake of Paul Ryan from As Goes Janesville. We just have 30 seconds, Brad. Can you respond to the what he espouses and what's saving Janesville now?
Sure. Quickly, I want to just point out, too, it was a federal earmark grant, not stimulus funds, that paid for Cindy School. The thing that happens in that clip is that, again, I think I'm trying to get Paul to be a little bit more nuanced about the situation on the ground for people who are really experiencing job loss. And yet he describes it as a kind of choice. But the truth is, a lot of the workers who were laid off, there were 11,000 dislocated workers and people affected in Janesville, and they didn't have
a choice. We're going to have to leave it there. Brad Lichtenstein, As Goes Janesville, will be on PBS. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Bob Longman with the WUSB Concert Billboard for Tuesday, August 14th. Bare Naked Ladies, Blues Traveler, Big Head Todd, and The Monsters and Cracker will be at the Jones Beach Theater in Wantagh, 7 p.m. The On Your Radar series continues at the Living Room in Manhattan with Kate Bakel, Mark Von M, and Rock, Paper, Scissors. That's at 7 p.m. Your billboard for Wednesday, August 15th. At the Harborfront Park in Port Jefferson Village, Brother Son appears at 6:30 p.m. Mary Lamont Band will be at the Common Ground Rotary Park in Sayville, 7 p.m. Clayton, Shadow Strike, and Life After Death will be at 89 North in Patchogue. And Nina Etc. will be at the Canal Cafe in Hampton Bays starting at 6 p.m. Your billboard for Thursday, August 16th. The Mickey Hart Band will be at the Paramount in Huntington, 8 p.m. Leo Kottke will be at the Stephen Talkhouse in Amagansett, 8 p.m. And Zeiss and Craig Greenberg Band will be at the 89 North in Patchogue. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, New Riders of the Purple Sage will be at 89 North on Friday. And on Saturday, Buddy Merriam will be at Tanner Park in Copeg. And Tony Blasancic's New Phase Orchestra will be at the Polonaise Park at Polish Town USA Festival in Riverhead starting at 5 p.m. And that's your WUSB Concert Billboard. You can tune in every day to hear the performers at the venues they're going to be playing at. You can look this up on WUSB.fm, clicking on the left where it says Concert Billboard. Or go to the WUSB Concert Billboard site on Facebook. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, and WUSB.fm on the web.
And this is radio station WUSB Stony Brook, time once again for Off the Wall. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I was just browsing the web and got kind of distracted. Yeah, good evening. It's Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. So much to read and look at and ponder and things like that. I was pondering some interesting things earlier today when I... well, first of all, I should tell you that the hurdle I had to go through to get where I even got. This concerns medication, specifically asthma medication that I'm on now as a result of the diagnosis I got earlier this year. That yes, in fact, you do have asthma, so you should be taking this this inhaler thing twice a day, once in the morning, or my version of morning, and once before going to sleep. And I've noticed that that dosage keeps increasing a little bit. Well, take two puffs this time. Take two puffs in the morning and one at night. Okay, now two at night and two in the morning. And, you know, that alone should have tipped me off that it's all a big scam. I mean, I always figured it was, but I don't know. I think without being completely paranoid, the medical industrial complex really has it in for us. But that's only one part of the story. I ran out of the stuff over the weekend. Actually, I ran out on Friday. And so I called up the pharmacy to get a renewal, and they said, you have no renewals on this. You have to get permission from the doctor. Permission from the doctor? This is the prescription that they wrote me, and I know there were at least two renewals on it. But when I looked at the box, sure enough, it said no renewals allowed. But on the prescription, it said that there were renewals. I knew that, but I didn't have that anymore. I gave that to the pharmacy. I had no proof, no evidence. So they said, okay, we'll contact the doctor. And of course, you know, contacting a doctor on a Friday is not going to result in anything until Tuesday at the earliest. And so I'm starting to panic. What happens if I don't have my medication? Will I stop breathing? Will all kinds of problems occur? Yeah, kind of, you know, bought right into all the propaganda. And then after stewing about it for a while, I realized, you know, this is not the way to be treated. I mean, my health insurance does not even cover this medication, so I have to pay $250 every month to get it, which is insane. It's completely insane. You have health insurance, you pay a huge amount for it, and they don't cover medication which is deemed necessary, and it turns out to be very expensive. So all of this was welling up inside of me as well, and then it hit me. You know, the pharmacy must have just gotten mixed up. Because it's the second time that I've had a prescription for this. They must have, in their infinite wisdom, assigned two different prescription numbers to the same person for the same drug. And so I called them back, asked them, can you please look it up and see if maybe there's another one that does have renewals? And they're like, oh, yeah, look at that. Wow. We never thought to do that. We never thought to look up your name with that drug to see if maybe the first time we did it, there was a duplicate entry. Instead, we just assumed that the one that said it was there were no refills was the only one there was. Well, no, there was another one, and as I remember, there were two refills on them, on that particular prescription. So they said, okay, well, we'll fill this and be ready first thing tomorrow. Well, I came in first thing tomorrow, which was like 5 p.m. for me, and they had no idea what I was talking about. It was like that conversation had never happened. I had to go through the whole thing all over again. How hard could it possibly have been for the person? I was speaking to the pharmacist, supposedly. They said they were the pharmacist. How hard was it for them to simply do what they said they were going to do or tell the person, if it was shift change or something, tell them to do it? Leave a note someplace? No, nothing like that. So I had to explain the whole situation again, go through that whole thing. Oh, look at that. There's a duplicate. Go through all that all over again. And then I said, okay, when would you like to pick that up? When would I like to pick that up? I'd like to pick that up 5 minutes ago. It was supposedly ready first thing in the morning. Here it is, now 5:15 in the afternoon. I'd like to pick that up right now. In fact, I can pick that up right now because you guys don't do anything. All you do is hand me the box because it's already made. Inhalers aren't created in the back of the pharmacy. No, they're sent to the pharmacy in boxes. So all you got to do is hand me the box that it's in. No, they can't do that. They've got to process it, which means I got to do all kinds of paperwork and stick those little stickers on. And only the pharmacist can do it. And the pharmacist is busy. She's like studying for her GED as well, you know, and doesn't have time to deal with customers, especially ones that are being mistreated. So more delays, more waiting, but finally, in the end, I got the stuff. Yeah, got the stuff. Would have been easier, you know, to get illicit drugs probably on the same corner, but I felt like I had a victory of sorts. Until today, when I actually took my morning dose a little while ago, and out falls this piece of paper, which it was bigger than before. There's always a little piece of paper in these boxes, but this one was really kind of obtrusive. So I actually looked at it, and it was bigger than the little tiny type I'm used to. And it had this notice, this cautionary notice that really got my attention. It said that some people who use this drug have a higher risk of death from asthma-related attacks. Yeah, it didn't say how many. It just said some people have a higher risk. And, you know, for a drug that's supposed to be treating a condition, it seems a bit ironic that you would be getting a higher incidence of that condition because you took that drug. And I kept reading on, and the tone of the thing was basically trying to convince me not to take it. Saying all kinds of things can happen, skin rashes and hypertension, and shakiness and nervousness and paranoia, perhaps, from reading this document and all kinds of other things. It was all there. Fascinating reading. Fever, chills, increased cough, increased breathing problems, change in mucus color. You never want that. Nasal congestion, vomiting, back pain, headache, throat pain. You name it. It's not one in a million people. It's people take this. Actually, you know, I believe it was Fred. I don't have the piece of paper in front of me, but I believe they said that people with a particular condition have a higher chance of getting this if this drug is taken. So I'm asking myself, what is the advantage here? What am I gaining exactly? Apart from spending a huge amount of money and going through all kinds of trapeze acts with the pharmacist, in the end, am I really better off? And they're trying to tell me to take more of this stuff. I mean, I can break out in a rash on command if I think that it's a side effect of something. And when you think about all these things that could possibly be happening, of course they're going to start happening. You're going to start, stammering and all kinds of things that might be a side effect of this drug. It can drive you crazy. And so I started thinking, well, you know, how bad was the asthma to start with? You know, maybe that was a better deal than this. And I recall, you know, when I went into the offices and I was breathing, I thought I was breathing great. In fact, the little handheld thing that I had with me, the consumer bought thing, in fact, two of them, when I blew into that, I was pegging it. I was going above the scale. But whenever I was in their office, no, not good enough. You're going to need more drugs. So I'm starting to see, you know, it's not really, yeah, I've got some mild condition, no question, but is it worth taking these increasingly bad-sounding drugs and taking more and more of them, and then, you know, it gets to the point where you have a condition and you need another drug to counter that condition, and you just start dancing the dance, and there's no end to it. Now, this is, of course, really bad for people who have serious conditions. They don't have a choice. And I still think I do, and I'm going to try and sort it out and maybe do a little bit of experimentation trying to lower the dose. I mean, this is not the first time this has happened. When I had a kidney stone condition a bunch of years ago, they said, no, you have to take this drug, this pill, every day for the rest of your life. And, you know, I consulted with some friends, and we looked at the side effects there, and high blood pressure was one of them, and all kinds of things that you certainly don't want. I opted instead to change my lifestyle, drink more water, do things that would not precipitate that particular condition. And I have not had a problem since. Well, except when I do things like go to Belarus. But for the most part, it's been free and clear. And I think, you know, in situations that are not life-threatening, it's a good idea to take a close look at your options. And the options are not always just what the doctor tells you to do as far as what kind of drug to take. We are in such a highly over-medicated society, and it goes from children to senior citizens. I don't recall kids when I was growing up being medicated like they are now. I really don't recall that. Of course, maybe as a kid I wasn't told that, but it just seems that kids being kids is a problem these days and needs to be dealt with through drugs. And of course, you have all your recreational drug users who are just as guilty, thinking that the way to change the world is through artificial means, not actually changing, just changing the perception. I mean, you know, cutting loose, getting rid of your inhibitions, that's all fine and good, and it does open up some doors for you. Makes you think a little bit more clearly sometimes. But it's not a crutch. It's not something to go to every day or very frequently. So, yeah, you know, if at all possible, if you find yourself in a situation where you have drugs in your life in one form or another, consider changing that so that there are less of them. If that is a possibility. Some people, obviously, it's not a possibility, and they go off their meds, and everything goes crazy, and next thing you know, you're in the headlines. That's not what I'm talking about. That's rare. It's not common. It's rare. There's no reason it should be more common today than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. But if we all believe that all these rules apply to everybody, then, yeah, we wind up in a society where everyone's on something, and we're slaves to it. So I don't know. I'm down to two puffs a day now, and I'm thinking I'm going to go down to one puff and see how that works out. And maybe try some other things, too, you know? Check for mold and improve the air quality and various other things like that. Get an exercise regime going that lends itself to breathing better. All sorts of things. You don't have to just follow orders. So yeah, that's what happens when a piece of paper falls out of your medication. When you start taking it, you really begin to think. And it's always good to think, not just follow orders. Yeah, so, okay, what's been going on? Well, all kinds of things have been going on, of course. We have this guy, Paul Ryan, now is a vice presidential candidate with Mitt Romney. He kind of bores me, to be honest. Kind of bores me. I don't think it's going to improve their chances at all. I hope it doesn't. But, yeah, let's wait for him to say something. Let's wait for him to say something really arrogant or stupid or whatnot. Anything's possible, I suppose. But Paul Ryan, yeah. Romney Ryan. Yeah, I guess that has a ring to it. So it's going to intensify. Of course, it's been going on all year, but it's going to intensify from this point on. We have the two conventions going on in less than a month's time. And, of course, the whole final election swing and debates and fun like that. And hopefully we'll put the pressure on Obama to be a bit more progressive. Do some more things that steer us away from the destructive policies of the past and present. So many things we should be doing. So many things we shouldn't be doing. All the billions of dollars wasted on war that got us nowhere. All the billions cut from things that could have benefited us. Everything from space exploration to high-speed rail. It's not too late. We still have a shot if we put the pressure on. If we sit back and just complain, though, you know, we're just as guilty as anybody else. Okay, any shootings this week? Of course there were shootings this week. There was something, was it in Texas? Somebody was being evicted and wound up taking out a bunch of people because he didn't. Yeah, it was pretty bad. A bunch of armed guys surrounded this fella in Times Square and just unloaded their weapons into him. Yeah, and most people seem to think that's perfectly okay because they were wearing uniforms. And he was out of his mind. You hear about this? There was actual video of it. People were recording this on their phones, along with running commentary. Here's from the New York Times. Two police officers fired a total of 12 shots at Darius Kennedy, the man who brandished a knife at the police while leading them on a chase through Times Square on Saturday afternoon. It sounds a bit more dramatic than it actually was. What he was doing, if you look at the video, he had a knife in his hands and he was walking backwards. Apparently, he was walking backwards for blocks, holding the knife. And, that's weird. That's not good. They stopped the guy because he was smoking pot, the ultimate crime. But obviously, yeah, the guy is a bit deranged. He had a history of problems of sorts like that. They say they tried pepper spraying him, but those attempts, according to them, appeared to have little or no effect on him. I don't know what kind of, if they're using these little tiny sprayer things and they're out in the open air, it's a lot harder to, I'm no expert, but I imagine it's a lot easier to pepper spray people that that are demonstrating, that are standing still, and you walk right up to them and spray them in the face. But if you're say 5 feet away and you aim it at them, yeah, it's probably not going to even reach them. So I'm not surprised about that. They didn't have a taser or any other type of stun gun. Kind of surprises me. Usually they have those things all the time. This guy is 51 years old. Police believe he was unemployed, lived in Hempstead here on Long Island. He'd been arrested 10 times, 7 of those for possession of marijuana. Yeah, and that kind of, you know, affects someone's life when you get arrested 7 times for possessing something, which in and of itself, it's not a problem. It's not as much of a problem as certain other things that are illegal to possess. But his most recent run-ins, that is, with the police, he had been violent. He was charged with criminal possession of a weapon for threatening to harm police officers with a screwdriver. And again, though, you know, not being there, you don't know exactly how that played out. Don't come any closer, I got a screwdriver. You know, that's a threat, and that's considered violence. Just as much as charging at somebody with a war cry and trying to plunge a screwdriver into them. You don't know exactly what happened. Now, he had been at Bellevue Hospital for a psychiatric evaluation after cops found him knocking over garbage cans in Times Square. So, yeah, the guy had a history. The guy had problems. Now, this is the thing that I've got a real problem with. And you always have to look at the people who are not the most attractive people in society, the people who are the problems, the people who aren't mentally there, because they're the ones who can't speak for themselves. And I ask myself, how is it necessary to fire so many shots to take this guy down? They fired 12 shots at him. Okay, first of all, if you have to fire any shots at all, and we'll get to that in a second, but wouldn't one do the job? I mean, unless you're a really bad shot and you're going to miss 11 times, you know, you hit the guy in the foot or something like that. He's not going to come charging at you because you just hit him in the foot. He'll be very angry. Yeah, there's no question about that. But he won't be dead. Like he is now. It just makes me wonder, what kind of training do these people have? Where this is the only way they can take down somebody. Now, he was walking backwards. He was walking backwards. How hard would it have been for somebody to sneak up behind him and just whack him over the head or something? You know, like they do in movies. He's walking backwards. He doesn't have a rear view mirror. He couldn't see. Not rocket science. They could have taken him down in a variety of ways. Didn't have to fire their guns. They could have thrown a net over him. Okay, yeah, he had a knife. He could have cut through the net. But it would have taken a bit of time. Throw another net over him. How many nets are we going to waste? Okay, so we're talking about cost here of nets versus someone's life. We're talking about time, the time it would take to get a net and to throw it over him and to close traffic. Cops should be there to save human lives, not take them. And it's not up to them to judge the quality of that human life. No matter how crazy somebody is, inflicting any kind of bodily harm on them, let alone death, is a last resort and a big indication of failure. But, you know, I'm open to being wrong on this. So let's go over to the Daily News, their website. I haven't looked at this today. I just glanced at it occasionally in the days after after this happened. I was astounded. Well, here's a story, most recent story. Family of deranged man fatally shot by cops in Times Square, upset over use deadly force. They left out an of in that headline. Okay, but I guess that's just the way they talk. Yeah, so family of deranged man is upset that he was fatally shot by the cops. Who wouldn't be? Deranged or not, a member of the family. There's something wrong with that, certainly. But and there's a subheadline, but cops say Darius Kennedy was just 3 feet from the officers when he lunged at them with a knife. Okay, again, he was walking backwards. And I think what happened was they finally did get somebody on the other side of him. And maybe he turned around and started moving towards him at that point. I don't know. I have not seen clear video of exactly what happened there. But 3 feet is, yeah, he can cover that pretty quickly, but there are ways to deal with it, not firing 12 shots. And, you know, the other thing that gets me, if he's lunging at the cops on the other side of him, and the cops that are in front of him are firing, aren't they firing directly at the cops that are behind him? So something doesn't add up with that story. But even in the worst case scenario where he was lunging with a knife, you don't have to kill the guy. There's ways of disabling him. If you're a cop, you should know these ways. Anyway, let's look at this story for a moment. Relatives of the deranged knife-wielding man gunned down by cops in Times Square say they're upset about the NYPD's use of deadly force in the confrontation. Doesn't take 12 bullets to kill one person. The dead man's aunt, Margaret Johnson, said to the Daily News, "I think it could have been done another way." I agree 100%. Of course it could be done another way. Only the worst types of law enforcement officials would think otherwise, that this was the only option. And that brings in NYPD Commissioner Raymond Kelly, who said the fatal shooting was appropriate. Mayor Bloomberg also said the shooting appeared to be justified. He had a knife and was going after people. It's just one of those terrible, unfortunate events. But first of all, he wasn't going after people. He was holding it up in the air and backing away. He was probably on some kind of drug, probably beyond pot, I would imagine. But whatever it was, he was certainly scared. He was certainly paranoid and had no idea what he was going to do. And just saw these, if you look at the video, you see these soldiers basically with weapons pointed, slowly approaching. Now, imagine from his point of view what's going on there. He's in some kind of enemy territory. Something really weird's going on. He's got a knife. You know, he's holding it up in the air just to sort of indicate that he's not completely defenseless. And backing away from them. Now, you know, it shouldn't matter how much time it takes to talk somebody down. You take the time. Because lives, even deranged lives, are precious and should not be wasted like this. Now, when they tried to bust him for the pot possession, he grew belligerent. When police attempted to cuff him, he struggled free, pulling an IKEA kitchen knife with a 6-inch blade out of his pocket and waving it over his head. It sounds like these guys really aren't trained in the procedure of subduing somebody in the first place. I mean, we all know that they respond in a mob. It's not just one cop trying to cuff you. It's usually about four. And he was able to struggle free and reach into his pocket to get a knife, which they didn't realize was there. Now, basically, he was told repeatedly to drop the knife, did not do that, and eventually was alleged to have lunged at them with a knife, and they fired 12 shots at him. He was hit at least 7 times. And, it's a very unfortunate situation. Now, okay, what I find most telling in a story like this, though, is to see the reaction by the general public. by the people that are invited to speak, to say their what's on their minds about this. And again, I said I'm open to being proven wrong here. So let's see what the rest of the world has to say. Okay. Here's one person that that asked, does it take a dozen cops to kill one man? What if there are bystanders hurt? This man agreed to be killed. I don't know what that even means, but not by firing squad. The police act more as a fraternity than to serve and protect. Well, for the most part, I agree with that that point of view. But here's a person who says, it's tragic when any human being is killed, but the greater tragedy is how the unsupportable claims by this man's family resemble other charges made against the police as they try to contain an almost insurmountably entrenched culture of crime and violence that has become status quo in the inner city. Just today, the news ran a story about another random shooting in Brownsville, Brooklyn. This adds to the shootings and stabbings and general lawless behavior that are commonplace in neighborhoods like Brownsville. I have to confess that I resent the way violence in Brownsville, East New York, and Bed-Stuy sometimes gives Brooklyn itself a bad name, because my home borough is actually a wonderful, safe place outside of so-called inner-city neighborhoods. I'm not talking about wealthy areas like Park Slope or Brooklyn Heights or Williamsburg. To me, that's not Brooklyn. I'm referring to middle and working-class areas of Old Brooklyn, the Marine Park, Flatlands, Mill Basin, Bergen Beach, Sheepshead Bay, Brighton Beach, Bay Ridge, Bensonhurst, etc. Places that are safe even in hard times. The fact that these self-proclaimed leaders of inner-city neighborhoods have got to realize that their communities are dangerous to themselves and everyone else, and they've got to openly condemn the so-called ghetto lifestyle that is rampant there. Yeah, you know, completely off the topic. We're talking about a particular situation here, and now we're into socioeconomic issues, tinged with race issues. Here's another one. All black people and liberal whites whining about racism. Slap yourselves. This dude has been in contact with the wrong end of the law for more than 3 decades. Every black man from urban areas knows full well that a cop drawing on you will not have a good outcome with one false move. And wielding a knife. Yes, no one has ever taken a hostage by knife point. It's recorded. They told moron to drop it. Hit him with pepper spray. He continued with his belligerence. He got popped. Next. Yeah. Here's another one. I think they could have given him a warning shot. This is a quote. I think they could have given him a warning shot, probably a shot in the leg or arm, said Kennedy's cousin, Kathy Johnson. Well, according to this person, warning shots are illegal. You cannot just fire in the air or at an object to scare someone, and no police department teaches you to shoot at an arm or leg. Well, that's an interesting fact, isn't it? It's always a center of mass. Maybe that's the problem. What else? Okay, now they're arguing about weapons over here. Actually, you know, the tone here is a lot nicer than it was a couple of days ago. Unjustified kill, eh? Next time a nutcase comes up to you with a 6-inch blade threatening to slice you, don't call the cops. You never know when these mentally unstable people are going to pop. And such a fine man with a rap sheet extending back to 1978. Quite frankly, I don't think anyone's losing any sleep over this. Just one less problem we have to deal with. That's kind of the callousness that most people seem to be treating this with. And there's a lot of racism here that I don't want to get into. It really is pretty disgusting. Race was not an issue here. It's become an issue on these chat boards on all the newspapers because, the guy was black and most of the cops weren't. But that was not part of the story until it became part of the story by all these crazy racist comments. I just don't even want to get into those, but it shows that we live in such a violent society, and I think this adds to it. When you see cops acting like this, it becomes acceptable. This should not be acceptable. In no way should this be something that people are happy about or proud of. No, this represents not being able to handle a situation and reacting in a panic. Okay, let's see, what else? Yeah, that was this week's fun. We have some letters to read, and I'd like to take some phone calls, too, if possible. Let me give out the phone number, and I'll read a letter or two. And if the phones are ringing, we'll go to delay and have all kinds of fun. Basically, the phone number is, what is it again? 631-632-9872. 631-632-WUSB. Dear Emmanuel, I just finished listening to your August 7th show. I have a critique to offer about your commentary on guns in the wake of yet another senseless shooting, this time in Wisconsin. Before I do, I'd like to point out that I agree with your position that there needs to be greater controls on availability of guns, especially certain types of guns. So my critique is not intended to be an opposing viewpoint, nor to show support for the let's see who can gather the most firepower crowd. That said, I'd like to point out a misunderstanding of terminology that seems to be common among gun control advocates, which I feel weakens their position in the eyes of their opponents. The term semi-automatic does not mean that it is capable of being switched between automatic and non-automatic modes, though it seems as if many, including yourself, are interpreting it this way. It means that one bullet leaves the gun for every time the shooter pulls and releases the trigger. Semi-automatic weapons do not emit a stream of bullets for the duration of time the trigger is held. That is what a fully automatic weapon does. To be honest, when you're in its way, there's pretty much no difference. I mean, you can pull a trigger pretty quickly. And, you know, if holding it down, you have even more of a spray. Yeah, okay, that's insane. Nobody can stand up against that. They're both something that is not needed in day-to-day life or in any civilian life that I can see. It's not needed for hunting. It's not needed to protect yourself. If you subscribe to those views, yes, you know, something that can fire a single shot is sufficient. Doesn't take that long to fire a second shot, but you don't need to be firing them continuously. But point taken, I see the difference now. Continuing with this letter, there are guns which can switch between modes, but they fall into the same category as those guns which are always fully automatic and are far more tightly regulated than any other class of gun. The semi-automatic type of handgun is the Windows of the handgun world and has a de facto monopoly. Interesting. Even most revolvers are technically semi-automatic, since all you have to do is pull the trigger again to make it shoot again. You know, I hear people who are hunting various animals, they're using that because it used to be you heard a shot, then a few seconds later you hear another shot. Those were hunters. Now you hear shot, 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 you know, just in succession. Those aren't very good hunters. They need to fire consecutively at the same animal because they can't hit them the first time. You know, I just think there should be a higher skill set going on here. You should be taught to hit a target, not simply shoot in a general vicinity and hope one of them hits. That's the NYPD way of doing things. No, you guys can do better than that. It's like, you know, people who hunt with bows and arrows, you don't get a second arrow right away. You got to put it in the bow and fire it again. So, yeah, you know, I think in a way it's laziness. Finishing up here, I'll agree that certain weapons are far more problematic than others, but they're being semi-automatic isn't necessarily relevant. I'd be more worried about an assailant with a high-capacity shotgun than a semi-automatic handgun. Signed, Keith. Thanks very much for that letter. And here's a letter from Randy, who says that he's a right-winger who smokes pot and wanted... I did issue a challenge to see if any right-wingers are out there who get high, and it's good to know. Good to know that you guys are out there, too. He says, I love law and order and view the prohibition of marijuana as something which contributes to erosion of respect for the law. And yes, I think we see that time and time again. Here's another letter. I'll first admit up front that I'm a Southerner, a gun owner, and a longtime listener of Off the Hook and Off the Wall. I've got one question that I'm very curious to have answered because as of yet, no one has given me any legitimate answer. What gun control law could be put in place, short of a complete ban of all firearms to all citizens, that would have prevented this highly intelligent, completely law-abiding, and apparently mentally stable citizen from buying a firearm? I don't know which shooting you're talking about because there have been so many, and this letter might be a couple of weeks old. I think this might have been the movie theater shooting in Colorado. I'm not generally against the idea of requiring certain realistic levels of training, as long as the cost is not too prohibitive for most people. And also licensing for firearms. I'm certainly in agreement with machine gun bans and other similar laws. Okay, you know what? Let's all agree on that. Can we start there? Can we just start with banning machine guns in the hands of regular citizens? Be it resolved, you know? Can we just agree? Right wing, left wing, gun owner, non-gun owner. Those are something that are not needed by your average non-drug cartel citizen. Okay? So there you go. That's a starting point. And I seem to find that people agree that, yeah, machine guns are not appropriate. Cannons are not appropriate. Tanks? No, not really. Unless you're just using it for commuting. Now, okay. I don't even have much of an issue with the Brady Bill, except the magazine caps, but that's a conversation for another day. Didn't have much of an issue with the Brady Bill when it was in effect, but I simply don't see any way that any proposed gun control law, again, short of a complete ban on firearm ownership, could have prevented this guy from doing what he did. Yeah, it's an absolute tragedy, but I simply don't see any way legislation could have prevented this, because he could have easily passed all the proposed criteria. And that is a valid point. He followed all the rules and demonstrated to me that the rules don't mean much, because people snap after they follow the rules. So what I think would have helped in this particular case would have been if the weapon that he had was not capable of doing so much damage so quickly. No, we could not have prevented it, but we could have lessened the damage. So when we look at the types of weapons that are being used in such attacks, we ask ourselves, are these the types of weapons that we need for these values that we stand up for? We being a collective society. I personally don't happen to agree, but I'm open to listening. So, okay, to protect yourself in your home, do you need something that fires multiple shots in a couple of seconds? Probably not. At least, you know, unless you're being hunted by your entire neighborhood, I don't think you do. In fact, I think you just need a tape recording of the sound the shotgun makes. That usually does the job. You know, that sound when you cock it? Yeah, I can't imitate it, but, you know, everyone's heard it. Well, not in real life, hopefully, but you've heard the sound. So, okay. For hunting, as we've already discussed, you know, if you're a good hunter, you don't need to fire multiple rounds in a second or two. So it's a step. Some will say it's a step towards a total ban. That's not what I believe. Because in certain parts of the country, you do need weapons to protect yourself against wildlife and for other reasons too, because people live in different ways. I understand that. But in an urban environment, in a suburban environment, it's different. And we have to understand that as well. It's not 1776. And we all have to agree on that. We can't live by the same rules. We don't on virtually anything. So what applied then does not apply now, for good or for bad. That's just a fact, and we have to deal with that. And because you bring that up does not mean that you're against the founding of the country. No, it just means that you're living in present-day society. So yeah, no. One bit of legislation would have prevented some maniac from going crazy and opening fire in a store or a movie theater or a mosque or something like that. But it could have prevented somebody from firing multiple rounds and having multiple weapons. That's another thing. How many guns do you need? If you're a collector, that's one thing, but you don't load it if you're a collector. It's kept under certain conditions, which, yes, should be regulated. Because you don't want to turn into, an army of your own. And that can sometimes happen when you collect too many weapons. Let's finish with this letter here. Let's move on and say that this guy was somehow prevented from buying the guns he used. My guess is that he would have then gone to the local feed store and bought everything he needed to build a large ANFO bomb, the two components of which can be bought without any kind of regulation or registration, whatsoever at any feed store or farm supply, and killed every single person in the entire theater. But you know what? That doesn't happen very often, does it? And I think the reason it doesn't happen is because it takes a lot of work and planning to do something like that. Whereas with a gun, you can simply just walk in and start firing. You don't have to walk in. Somebody comes up to you. You know what? I'm in a bad mood. There. I'm going to fire at you. As opposed to, okay, I'm going to go down to the feed store now and get all these bags or whatever it is I need mixed together, get a vehicle, park it in the right place, set a timer. People are lazy. It's a lot of work. And we're not at the stage in society where things are blowing up. Some societies are, unfortunately. But I think that kind of demonstrates the point that people are going for the easy options, not the difficult ones. Crazy people will massacre innocents no matter what we do, and that certainly is true. Yes, making guns less accessible may prevent some idiots from losing it and killing large numbers of people, but for anyone with some level of intelligence, weapons of mass destruction, way worse than firearms, are easily accessible. Signed, Justin. Justin, good point at the end there, because imagine what's going on now with people losing it and taking out huge parts of the local population. Imagine that on a global scale. Imagine that with leaders of countries, and not just the rogue nations. You know, the ones that can fall into the wrong hands, or people just make a bad decision, or countries slide in a bad direction. It's happened before, it will happen again. And you have weapons that can take out more and more of the planet. You know, these things at some point will be used. If they're not watched over and kept minimal, and hopefully eventually gotten rid of entirely, because some of the weapons that are out there right now are simply terrifying on a global scale. Okay, can we read one more letter? Yeah, I think we have time for this one as well. I recently listened to the July 24th show and had some commentary. Guns will function perfectly fine in a vacuum. Oh, this is where I was saying that we should just suck all the oxygen out of a room and that way the guns won't work, something like that. I'm trying to think creatively here. Trying to help, you know, just guns in space, maybe there won't be gun battles. Of course, there'll be lasers and things like that. I know, we'll think of something, we always do. Okay, so guns will function perfectly fine in a vacuum. The oxygen consumed in firing is already present in the shell, and the firing pin just moves forward and starts the process, so the atmosphere will not be the issue. Also, maybe we can suck the oxygen out of the gun, or maybe make the firing pin not work. I don't know. Think of some way to just make the things not work. That'd be kind of cool. On the other hand, I think this was a play on words on your part. For a safe theater, if the entire thing was underwater, everyone could have an unobstructed, if murky, view, and bullets would be slowed to a stop after moving a few feet. Maybe that's a solution then. If we had evolved a little bit differently and we were underwater instead of on land, this wouldn't be nearly as much of a problem. It's just something to consider. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? That I was just watching this the other day with land tortoises. Don't ask why I was watching a program about land tortoises, but you know, I realized these creatures are pretty much the same as sea turtles. They're different, obviously. They work completely differently. You have snakes that live in the water. You have snakes that live on land. You have reptiles and amphibians and basically the same type of species, except one is in the land and one is in the sea. Now imagine that humans went both ways as well, and that humans wound up on land, but there's another whole human race in the sea. We haven't met them yet. For some reason, that just didn't work out. Or maybe they're there someplace, and they're just biding their time. Okay, continuing here. I really got off on a tangent there. The big difference between an assault rifle and a 50 caliber rifle. I love how everybody wants to correct my terminology. I mean, we should be right. We should be saying the right things, obviously. But we know so much as a society about weapons and fighter jets and military things. It's kind of sad that we spend so much time thinking about that. I mean, it's fascinating. It is interesting. No question about that. There's science involved. But let's take that knowledge and do something constructive with it, like the folks at NASA are doing. Anyway, the big difference between an assault rifle and a 50 caliber rifle is that the 50 is used to crack engine blocks on vehicles and is not supposed to be used in an anti-personnel capacity. The presence of such rifles in video games is evidence that the game makers either do not know or care what things do, as long as rounds come out of one end going very fast. Good point. As far as lasers go, there are already some systems that blind people, which would complicate an attack. Getting one to burn a person in a short amount of time would be a waste of directed energy as well as cruel, when a less permanent option not only exists but is simpler in its execution. That one of the victims of the theater shooting was about my age and had similar areas of interest really made the incident more real. For the most part, the news I have seen, which has been little, has consisted mostly of the number killed, wounded, and the particulars of the suspected shooter. Knowing that people had families and is trivial, as most everyone has them, but being shown they were people you could have hung out with makes the not even confusion as to why someone would do something like that, but just the magnitude of grief inflicted upon the world that much more apparent to me, at least. And then continuing on with one other topic here, instead of getting an internet connection on Mars, as we currently understand and use it, what they could do is post blogs, old BBS style, that would be compressed and sent from the colony as needed to the main net. Yeah, BBSs, they're going to come back when we go to Mars. Yep, BBSs, wow. This is how it's going to happen. Maybe Usenet will come back. I know it's still there, but maybe it'll be used more, you know? It won't be all this instant messaging. It'll be delayed messaging. As for reading websites, they could request periodic crossloads. Not really clear on upload, download, and if either would apply. Crossload, I guess that is the word you'd use. On sites / comments on their posts, have that sent in the same manner when there was a good clean shot. The no connection times would be when the sun was between the Earth and Mars. And, yeah, that does happen when Mars is on the other side of the sun. It's very far away. And sometimes it's right next to us, and it's a lot closer. That's why it's bright in the sky or dim in the sky. No matter the method of communication, there will be a lag of between 4 and 20 minutes, depending on how far the planets are from each other, which would stink for voice, but actually be totally fine for email. A small dish would suffice for the Mars side, as far as transmission goes, assuming a small amount of communication, of information, that is. And a similar protocol to what the rovers use could handle Earth-to-Mars traffic, probably with low bandwidth. Or the radio wavelength equivalent of lasers for a low-power, high-bandwidth, though literally narrow-band information transmission. Yeah, thanks Trinary Bit for that information. And for thinking positively about technology and ways to apply it and ways to build and get better rather than destroy and get worse. All right, we're out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening to my ranting and raving. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'll see you here again next week. Good night.
La ciudad se llama Duke, Nuevo México el estado. Entre la gente mafiosa su fama se ha propagado, causa de una nueva droga que los gringos han creado. Dicen que es color azul y que es pura calidad. Esa droga poderosa que circula en la ciudad y los dueños de la plaza no la pudieron parar. Anda caliente el cartel, al respeto le faltaron. Hablan de un tal Heisenberg que ahora controla el mercado. Nadie sabe nada de él porque nunca lo han mirado. El cartel es de respeto y jamás ha perdonado. Ese compa ya está muerto, no más no le han avisado.
Y así suenan los cuates de Sinaloa, mi compa. We'll be right back.
la fama de Heisenberg ya llegó hasta Michoacán. Desde allá quieren venir a probar ese cristal, ese material azul ya se hizo internacional. Ahora sí le quedó bien a Nuevo México el nombre. A México se parece en tanta droga que esconde, solo que hay un capo gringo, por Heisenberg lo conoce. Anda caliente el cartel, al respeto le faltaron. Hablan de un tal Heisenberg que ahora controla el mercado. Nadie sabe nada de él porque nunca lo han mirado. A la furia del cartel nadie jamás ha escapado. Ese compa ya está muerto, nomás no le han avisado.
Hey kids, Finn with you, Finn's Revolution, until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Tonight we're going to be delving into some of the music of Eleni Mandel, and we're going to have Yep Rock recordist Eleni Mandel on the air with us in about 15 minutes or so. So stay tuned for that and enjoy some Eleni tunes, plus giveaways for the new record.
snapshot, picture, postcard, souvenir. I've dreamed that we would spend our lives together, but now I have to love somebody new. You say that you could never stay forever, so falling out of love is what I'll do. Don't make me fall out of love with you, baby. It hurts as much as you falling out with me. How can laughing close to tears turn to blindness? And good times just a faded memory. Stretching out ahead, just curl your arm around me while I'm sleeping soft and stormy, and I'll never have to fall in love again.
First you fell fell in love. Then you picked a fight. You promised me, you promised me, you kissed me. Was a snake bite. My little finger travel up my arm, taking hold and squeeze my heart, my lungs. I'm dead, I'm gone.
Listening to Eleni Mandel right now. We're going to have her on the air in just a few moments. Meanwhile, this is a song from her first record, Wishbone. This is called Snake Song.
When he ran with the shirt on his back and the money in his hand, he went down on his belly and his leather on the floor. Should've known better, always done it before. And he laughed, always do it some more. He lied when he kissed a poor lonely miss. He lied, oh, he lied to me. Kicked and he broke with a shout. Then he took me by the hand and he dragged me all about. He went down on his belly and he slithered like a creep through the alleys and the gutters, down the cold dark streets. He said I should've known better. Said I should've known better. Said I, oh I, yeah I should've known.